Are your ears bored?
Yeah.
Are you looking for a new podcast that will make you laugh, learn, and say ¿qué?
Yeah.
Then tune in to Locatora Radio Season 10 today.
Okay.
Now that's what I call a podcast. I'm Diosa.
I'm Mala.
The host of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela.
Which is just a very extra way of saying...
A podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio Season 10 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Israel Gutierrez, and I'm hosting a new podcast, Dub Dynasty, the story of how the Golden State Warriors have dominated the NBA for over a decade.
The Golden State Warriors, once again, are NBA champions.
Today, the Warriors dynasty remains alive, in large part because of a scrawny 6'2" hooper who everyone seems to love.
For what Steph has done for the game, he's certainly on that Mount Rushmore.
Come revisit this magical Warriors ride. Listen to Dub Dynasty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We asked parents who adopted teens to share their journey.
We just kind of knew from the beginning that we were family.
They showcased a sense of love that I never had before. I mean, he's not only my parent, like he's like my best friend.
At the end of the day, it's all been worth it. I wouldn't change a thing about our lives.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to learn more. Brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Dime, ven, I'm La Gata, the culture's favorite reggaeton historian, musicóloga, public scholar, and recording artist. Yes, that means I've done the work. On my show, the Reggaeto con La Gata podcast, I'm not only talking to Flor Menor, who has the number one reggaeton track in the world right now, I'm also going to be on Perreo to speak with music innovators like Ryan Now, who is known for her media roquera tracks and collaborating with artists like Bad Bunny. We're also giving you the culture breakdown straight from the source. Listen to Reggaeto con La Gata on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started this journey by tracing the roots of Altadena, one of California's first Black middle-class neighborhoods. Then we examined how redlining shaped its borders, trying to keep Black families out. We uncovered the painful truth about evacuation delays and the lives lost while residents waited for a warning that came too late. And most recently, we stepped back to see the broader picture, connecting Altadena's experience to Black Wall Street, to post-Katrina New Orleans, and to the long history of what happens when disaster meets systemic neglect. In this episode, we'll focus on what happens next. When the smoke clears, when the headlines fade, when the systems designed to protect you don't. For decades, insurance discrimination has quietly shaped the recovery of Black neighborhoods, denying claims, underpaying families, and forcing communities to fight for the help they've already paid for. The fire may be out, but for some families in Altadena, the real battle has only just begun. Across the community, survivors are facing a second crisis. In the weeks after the Eaton fire, while families were still picking through the ashes, California's largest home insurer, State Farm, filed a 22% emergency rate hike. They said it was needed to offset the rising cost of the fires. Then, following public outcry, they lowered their ask to 17%. But for families still displaced, still waiting for help, the timing felt like a gut punch. While some policyholders say they've gotten support, many others describe delays, denials, and lowball offers that don't come close to the cost of rebuilding. And as State Farm pushes forward with its rate increase, residents are left asking, how can the same company asking for more still be doing less? The hike was approved on a provisional basis pending a judge's final sign-off. But for many, the damage is already done. Because it's not just about higher premiums, it's about trust. And for those stuck in limbo, waiting for answers, that trust feels broken. We've heard the stories of homes turned to ash, of families who lost everything in an instant. But what about the families whose homes didn't burn? That's where Stacy Bolden's story begins. Stacy lives on the east side of Altadena, where evacuation orders came early around 7:30 p.m. Her house didn't burn, and from the outside, it may look untouched. But in the inside, it's a different story. Her home is not safe, and Stacy hasn't lived there since the fire. She's been displaced now for more than 100 days, her son living elsewhere. Her routine, her stability, her sense of home, all gone. And for a long time, because her house was still standing, Stacy didn't even consider herself a victim. But loss doesn't always look like rubble. Sometimes it looks like silence, like separation, and a life that no longer feels like your own. Stacy is living proof that just because your home did not burn doesn't mean the fire didn't change everything. I'm Mimi Brown, and in this series, you'll hear stories told firsthand by the people who live them. These are their stories, their memories, and their truths. This is To Altadena with Love. Meet Stacy Bolden.
When I evacuated January 7th, it never occurred to me that I would not be back in the house in April. I truly thought, I'll be back tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow, because it never occurred to me that I would be involved in a wildfire in that way, because in my mind, the wildfire would happen up in the mountain, and that, you know, it would have to burn through the whole town. And this time it did.
As a person who has a what they call structure still standing, that we were slow to, I think, get recognition, and I think we're still kind of waiting for recognition in a way. We've been slow to get information. And it's not that, you know, we felt like we were, let me put it this way. Given the fact that so many people lost their homes, you know, we know they were the people who were the most in need, right? They really needed to have attention. They needed to have that attention because they were in need. They needed help. They needed resources. And they needed it immediately. At the same time, we have homes, but we don't have access to them or anything that's in them. So we also only have what we evacuated with.
But the house with the goats is still here.
It took some time, I think, for people to recognize that piece of it. And eventually, people just started kind of banding together so that we could get information and share information and also advocate for our homes. It's been kind of a learning process, because it took time to come to the realization that, you know, we're going to have to lean on each other for a while until the officials can get the information that we need to be comfortable. And when I say comfortable, I mean, you know, is it even safe to be here? You know, when will it be safe to be here? You know, how do we, you know, deal with our insurance companies who are not really wanting to deal with us? There's just been a lot of issues that have come up, that people have had questions. And it's, you know, it's taken a little while to get some answers. One of the things that people are concerned about is soil contamination. You know, can I dig a garden in my backyard? Is it safe to do that? So, you know, we're slowly getting some answers to that. It took a little time to, you know, be able to raise my hand and say, well, I'm one of the people affected by the fire, and I would like some help too. Why can't you just be grateful that your house didn't burn down?
It's like, well, I am grateful. I am grateful. I'm also spending a lot of money on gas that I wouldn't normally spend. I also have to go get something to wear because all of my clothes are in my house and I can't get into my house.
So this is about 2 blocks up the hill from me.
I remember being alerted that there was a fire in Eaton Canyon and that there were crews on scene. And we were in a restaurant at the time, and I didn't think too much of it because they said crews were on scene. And a very short time later, a girlfriend called me to ask if I had evacuated. And I thought, okay, the fire just started. Why are we being evacuated? But we finished up our meal and left the restaurant, and we stepped out into the parking lot and looked up at the mountain, and it looked like a volcano. So we knew we had to get, back to the house so that we could gather things together to evacuate. And it was kind of surreal driving back up to the house because it was smoky and power was out. So it was dark, and the only lights we had were headlights and smoke. And we could see flashing lights from emergency vehicles. We went back and forth with whether or not we really needed to evacuate because I don't live all that close to Eaton Canyon. This probably isn't actually going to affect us. It's too far away. It's moving in the wrong direction. But looked up at the sky and thought, I don't know. This doesn't look good. So I, wasn't really sure what to grab, but did, we grabbed a few things and left.
It's bad. This is bad. And there are some fire trucks around, but ju there's just not enough.
And then once I was situated and comfortable, I turned on the news. It was, being covered. And they weren't really covering Palisades anymore. They were covering Altadena. And I remember looking, trying to determine where they were. Does that house look familiar? What street are they on? Because there was no way to really tell. So just, trying to figure out what was going on. I think I slept for maybe 30 minutes. I fell asleep and, was right back to watching the news. I spent a great deal of time on the phone with a friend. And so she and I were on the phone all night, also trying to figure out what was going on in Altadena. How bad is this fire? Where is this fire? Discussing different people we knew who had gotten out or didn't get weren't, I guess, didn't get out when they should have gotten out and woke up to a houses, filled with smoke and woke up to their street already on fire. And I discovered as time went by, that was the story for a lot of people, that they had to kind of flee for their lives with just the clothes that they had on. We were lucky because they evacuated my part of town early.
Of them, I hope they will, send up the scooper plane or helicopter so they can drop water on us. We need that.
I am on the east side of Altadena. We
Awesome.
were told to evacuate, and it popped up on the phone and it said to leave. And we got that notice. I want to say it was around 7. My screenshot says I captured this on January 7th at 7:30 p.m.
A few streets.
Altadena has another issue. If you live fairly, high up on the mountain in the foothills, cell phone service is spotty. So, I know someone who said they never got an alert on their phone, because they don't have good cell service. They depend on Wi-Fi, and the power was out. So when your power is out, so is your Wi-Fi. The morning of the 8th, what we saw was just surreal. There were We got up there probably around 10:30 or 11 o'clock, and there were structures still actively burning.
crazy. This house has been burning since before we got over here, and there's two units, now three, and this fire, like, it won't go out, and now the winds are kicking back up again.
We didn't have any water pressure because one of the things I wanted to do was go back and, you know, wet my roof down, right? But couldn't do that because we didn't have any water pressure.
I can feel the heat coming off.
We had units on scene from Riverside and from Cal Fire who were in my neighborhood. I want to say outnumbered by the number of structures that were burning. I remember I spoke to one gentleman who said he flagged down a truck and the truck sprayed foam on the side of his house because the house next door was ablaze. And that saved his house.
No, we still need prayers. We're not out of the woods yet.
FEMA came through with hotels for a while. The difficult thing about the insurance companies is, you know, some of them would only pay for you to stay at a hotel for like 5 days, and then you have to check out, and then you have to check back into another place. I was told that, you know, I qualified for a level 3 cleaning out of 4 levels. So that entailed getting my insulation replaced, because the attic is full of ash and soot, and having everything inside the house HEPA vacuumed, having the refrigerator cleaned out, having backyard, you know, patio furniture cleaned, and having the exterior of the house pressure washed. We know a little bit more about the environmental impact of the fire. And so now the insurance companies are giving the okay to actually having what's called a pack out. And so they're actually removing the items from the house and cleaning the walls and cleaning every item in the house.
There's a fire down there.
I used to think of home as, you know, when I was younger, that wherever my mother was, right? Wherever my mother was, that was home, right? You know, my home is in Altadena, but I'm not there. But I'm also not with my son. So it's like, is home where he is? I'm not sure that I'll really feel that I'm home until he and I, you know, are back together under one roof, you know? I've, you know, allowed him to just stay at his dad's for the time being, because he has, you know, a bed there and a room there. That was kind of the easier thing to do for him, because his father lives in Pasadena. He still can go to school, you know, without it being a big deal and having to get up an hour or two earlier as he would if he was here in Inglewood. I am not from Altadena. I'm from Northern California, but I've lived in Altadena since 1997. And I didn't know anything about Altadena when I moved there, only that I liked the location and I liked the neighborhood. Now I know so much more, you know, about it. With the fires, I've, like a lot of people, been learning about, you know, the history of Altadena and the important role it's played for so many African American families. I had no idea.
This is the house behind the car. You can see it's Mar Vista.
I was very fortunate, or am very fortunate. I belong to these organizations of African-American women who mobilized very quickly to assess if there were members who were in need and what that need was, and to make sure that they were helpful. A lot of people didn't have that. They didn't know, you know, answers to certain questions, whereas AKA had
a WhatsApp thread. Jack and Jill had we still do have a WhatsApp thread where information is being shared on a daily basis. You know, I've gotten gift cards, I've gotten groceries, because information was shared that told me how to get these things. But not everybody had that.
Altadena has always been a place of Black excellence, a community that raised doctors, lawyers, educators, and professionals who broke barriers and built legacies. It's a neighborhood where ambition met opportunity, where generations of Black families proved what was possible. So when the fire hit, it wasn't just homes that were threatened. It was history, dignity, and everything this community had worked so hard to build. Nationally recognized civil rights attorney Lee Merritt knows that legacy all too well. He went to high school just down the road in neighboring Pasadena and says the area helped shape the man he is today. When he heard what happened, he jumped on a flight to L.A. and went straight into the heart of Altadena, where the smoke hadn't yet cleared and the need for support was urgent. In those first few days, Lee met with survivors, teamed up with local organizers, and offered free legal aid to families trying to make sense of their losses. And as you'll hear from Lee, this wasn't just about legal help. It was also about protecting the community his family still calls home. Meet Lee Merritt.
Altadena, Pasadena, that region saved my life. I am from South Central LA, and I was victim in terms of my family to a lot of the negative stereotypes of that, the gang stereotypes, the jailed, et cetera. I think it has a lot to do with my upbringing. My father was incarcerated from my earliest memories, and I felt very much born into sort of like a, I was born into the prison industrial complex in a lot of ways. And because of that, I've always wanted to work towards freeing our people from state control, freeing our people from limitations on our freedom, however they manifest. And that's been an interest of mine as I grew throughout my career. I learned more about how I might do that. But, you know, my early examples were people like Johnny Cochran who were fighting police brutality in L.A.
All right. I'm here in Pasadena, right around the corner from where I spent my high school years, off a mountain. I'll give you the address in a second.
Dina is a community that represents not only wealth, but a rare Black wealth class that my grandmother and my grandmother's husband were tapped into in a way culturally, communal-wise, in a way that I didn't appreciate. I remember going up to 110 as a kid, and it was like, you know, we're going to Granny's house, and they got it. You know what I'm saying? You know, they have resources, they have food, and then we'll go back to the hood, and that's where we live, and it's fine. But it was an escape to paradise. So because of this bridge that existed there that took a kid like me from South Central and plugged me into the Morehouse community, plugged me into the HBCU, Historically Black College community, plugged me even to the Black church community that had institutional wealth and resources and provided opportunities for me that I would have never had if I had been siloed in South Central.
There's my beautiful mother. Hi, Mom. My mom is fine. My family is okay. I'm happy to be out here back home in Pasadena. And, yeah, I just want to pop out. I just got off the plane. I'm figuring out where I can plug in. I'm going to go visit a family friend of mine who lost his home. He'll probably come back out and volunteer with me.
So this is true in any community, but, you know, they say charity starts at home. I checked on my mama. You know, that was the first place I wanted to see what was going on with Mom, because she seemed to not take it as seriously as all the reports that I were getting was saying that it was. Like, she wanted to stay in the house. And so I went home. I went to my grandmother's house in Pasadena, and I made sure that the house was insulated properly, that it wasn't actually in the line of fire, which it wasn't, and got it so that they had clean air and they could exist in the house.
This morning, I am at Victory Bible Church in Altadena, California. They have set up some giveaway tables for clothing items for men, women, and children. Serving a fresh breakfast. My grandmother is inside for worship.
I really wanted to just travel around my community. So I want to go up Colorado, which is the main thoroughfare, see what was going on. I drove up Lake, which is, takes me up to Altadena, the route that I'm familiar with, which is a little further up the mountain. And I saw a community center that had people with lines standing outside. And it was being organized by a brother named Brandon Lamar, who I knew from previous organizing work, who, you know, I think we had only really tapped in on social media, but I got to meet him face to face. And yeah, he was busy organizing the community because it was, I think, maybe 3 or 4 days into the tragedy, into the fires by the time I got there. And since the fires had began, the community began to organize itself, and Brandon emerged as a leader and a voice in the area.
The fire, I understand, in the Eaton area is 15% contained, so we're a long way before we're fully contained. And in the meantime, the community is coming together.
First rule was you tap on into people on the ground. You don't come into a community as a savior, but you got to figure out what the people on the ground need. And if you're a part of the community like I am, then it was just what we need, right?
It is the plan. I have spoken with Pastor John here. Legal consultation for families who have lost items in the fire today. And that's why I'm asking for attorneys to join with me to make sure everyone gets proper legal representation. And we're just triaging today, getting information, what they need. I'm not sure what they're asking for. But the pastor here asked me to speak with 30 of his families who lost items in the fire. So I'm appearing and I'm asking for my legal colleagues to join me. But I'll give
you. And so the first concern on the ground was just providing legal advice for the community at large about pitfalls to avoid. And then after that, when we start talking long term, it's figuring out who were going to be the partners or institutions that would be present to oversee the long-term progress. You want to talk to people who have a vested interest in the community, not people who just appeared out of nowhere. If something rubs you the wrong way about somebody, trust your instincts. Back off of that person, right? People who put unnecessary pressure on you to make this life-changing decisions, right? But that, you know, that is the concern, and that's what I wanted to be on the ground for.
The community has come together in the area. They are helping with distribution, dropping items off, clothes, water.
The work that we're doing at Victory Bible Church, under the leadership of Pastor John DeCure, his vision was a legacy land group, right? Where anyone who was impacted by the Eden fire, if they have a question, if they have a concern, if they have resources that they need that is forcing them out of the community, where we go, and the whole goal is to make sure that the land stays in the hand of the people who had it before the fire. And so we need to continue with the spirit of it's our responsibility to protect that community, because we can solve every problem that arises there. We have the resources within our international community, within the diaspora, to solve that any problem that arises there. We just need to continue to identify it as ours. And I think part of that is telling a story, which I'm glad that we're doing this now, just telling people about it, giving the people a resource for them to find out more about the region.
For more content, including behind-the-scenes videos, photos, and exclusive interviews, follow us on social media. You can find me at Mimi Brown TV on all platforms, and follow To Altadena with Love for more stories from the people who live them. I'm Mimi Brown. This is To Altadena with Love. See you next time.
Are your ears bored?
Yeah. Are you looking for a new podcast that will make you laugh, learn, and say, ¿qué?
Yeah.
Then tune in to Locatora Radio Season 10 today.
Okay.
Now that's what I call a podcast. I'm Diosa.
I'm Mala.
The host of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela.
Which is just a very extra way of saying...
A podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio Season 10 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Israel Gutierrez, and I'm hosting a new podcast, Dub Dynasty, the story of how the Golden State Warriors have dominated the NBA for over a decade.
The Golden State Warriors, once again, are NBA champions.
Today, the Warriors dynasty remains alive, in large part because of a scrawny 6'2" hooper who everyone seems to love.
For what Steph has done for the game, he's certainly on that Mount Rushmore.
Come revisit this magical Warriors ride. Listen to Dub Dynasty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sometimes as dads, I think we're too hard on ourselves. We get down on ourselves on not being able to, you know, we're the providers, but we also have to learn to take care of ourselves. Arapaho way, you got to pray for yourself as well as for everybody else, but never forget yourself. Self-love made me a better dad because I realized my worth.
Never stop being a dad. That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Dime a ver, I'm La Gata, the culture's favorite reggaeton historian, musicóloga, public scholar, and recording artist. Yes, that means I've done the work. On my show, the Reggaeton con La Gata podcast, I'm not only talking to Flor Menor, who has the number one reggaeton track in the world right now, I'm also going to be on Perreo to speak with music innovators like Reina, who is known for her media roquera tracks and collaborating with artists like Bad Bunny. We're also giving you the cultural breakdown straight from the source. Listen to Reggaeton con La Gata on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.